This is Adam Marcus, director of Jason Goes to Hell and the upcoming Secret Santa, and you're listening to the Rants from the Black Lodge podcast.
Recording live from the Black Lodge, it's me, the freewill burning head, turning ass, kicking machismo dripping, master podcast and mouthpiece of the Southeast, Brandon A. Lane, bringing you a new edition of the Rants from the Black Lodge podcast. If you're not familiar with this podcast, you like what you hear, then by all means, seek us out on the many, many platforms we have available, Spotify, Podbean, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, Radio FM, and of course at our homepage at juicykruger.com. What can I say, everybody? It's Friday the 13th. I hope you're ready and amped, because we're ready to celebrate with you tonight. The Rant Army has been clamoring for this one, and I cannot thank Adam Marcus enough for the audio intro you just heard at the top of the episode. Adam, cool guy, been really, really cool in the few times that we've conversed back and forth. Just a little backstory to how this all came about. I sent him an invite to like the page. He did. I added him to the group, and I'm thinking, like, fuck it, man, what have I got to lose? send him a message and see what he thinks about giving us an audio intro. And a few days later, he got back to me. I was out with a buddy of mine. We went to see the new Cobra Kai TV show. They debuted a couple episodes in theaters, which was cool, and I had my phone turned off, and I got back out in the car and turned my phone on, and I was like, oh fuck, I missed a message from Adam Marcus. And so I messaged him back like immediately, and we kind of conversed back and forth, and he asked me what my thoughts on the film were, and I was as honest as I could be with him, and we'll get into what I think about the movie. I'll tell you right now up front, it's going to be more positive than negative. There are some things that we're definitely going to take you to task for, Adam, if you happen to listen to this. But we're not going to be dicks. You know, no movie is perfect. But I will argue the fact that I think this is a good movie and definitely underrated, and especially in the canon of the other Friday the 13th films. Adam Marcus, since he did this nice thing for us, I definitely want everybody to go, you know, seek him out, tell him how thankful you are for doing this for us, because he absolutely did not have to do that. He's got a movie coming out, so I want to throw a little publicity that way. I don't know how much publicity this podcast is going to get to help that, but I definitely want everybody to go check it out. If it's not out by the time this podcast is released on July 13th, 2018, then it'll definitely be out sometime this year. The movie's called Secret Santa. I'm not going to go into too much detail what it's about, but I read the synopsis, and I'm pretty intrigued, so I'm hoping I'll get to get my little mitts on this pretty soon and check it out. And if you're interested in updates in the movie and finding out things like that, definitely go to follow him on Twitter for updates. And really, if you just want to follow him in general, at AdamMarcus13. He's pretty cool, laid back. He's very good with fans. So as long as you don't come at him with a bunch of bullshit, I think he might, don't quote me on this, you know, message you back, that kind of stuff. There's also, before we get into the rest of the podcast, this movie has a really interesting history as far as the production goes. And as quite a few of the Friday the 13th films. I mean, you know, the production hell that Jason Goes to Hell, and not Jason Goes to Hell, but Freddy vs. Jason went through. Jason Goes to Hell also had a pretty interesting history. I mean, from them, like, acquiring the rights from Paramount, Adam Marcus being, I believe, at the time, the youngest director ever to be hired by a major studio to direct a feature film. And things like that, and shooting, and no one checking dailies, and footage being unusable. I mean, just all kinds of ups and downs. And not to mention some things that we'll cover in this podcast, but there's a documentary coming out about the making of this film called The Dark Heart of Jason Voorhees, The Making of the Final Friday. Now, if you're a fan of the Friday the 13th films, fan of just horror in general, if you like behind-the-scenes stuff just about movies and movie making, I would highly recommend you go check this one out. I haven't seen it yet, but by all accounts, this is definitely going to be one that you want to check out. So without further ado, we'll be back shortly. Me and the boys will be checking out in long form Jason Goes to Hell from 1993, directed by the great Adam Marcus. But before we get down to brass tacks, we got some messages from some people who are making this podcast very, very possible, because we ain't making no money otherwise. So here's some messages from our following sponsors.
Next Generation Wrestling brings some of the most talked about and star-studded professional wrestlers from around the world. Based out of East Tennessee, NGW is becoming one of the most sought-after independent wrestling promotions in the past 4 years. Witness NGW Live or on demand on the High Spots Wrestling Network streaming app. Follow us on social media platforms at NextGenTN.
There's a man with no life in his eyes. Do, 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 do. I got stabbed between my thighs. Do, 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 do,
do, do, do, do. Part 5, Friday the 13th. We're not reviewing that movie tonight. All right, it's sitting to my left, as always, a longtime regular on the podcast, Mr. Stank Dick Eddie!
Hi, folks.
Hey, you want to give them your Twitter so they're going to send you some hate mail?
It is at Eddie J. Shepard, EddyJShepard.
It's a really long handle.
You know.
All the long handles.
And sitting to my right, my alcoholic, the alcoholic Carl Winslow to my Steve Urkel. Padawan, Scott Huff Jr.
I take that as a comment. I love Carl.
Oh, you should.
It's a you rare should. Condition. This day and age.
That should have been the intro.
Love and condition of a grand design. Some people say it's even harder to find.
Not only did we get a Full House reference last episode.
Oh, so we got to get a Perfect Strangers. What else was on TGIF?
Was it Step by Step?
Step by step, day by day. Cody, the Code Man. He just spit beer everywhere. The guy who played Cody in that show, he was in class of 1999, I believe. He was like a robot that had ninja powers or some shit. I don't remember.
We gotta find that show.
Not in the show, the movie. God damn.
God damn.
All right. Scott, you want to tell them where they can follow you on Twitter?
At Scottimus. Like Optimus, that's ScottimuS. Huff. Easy. Scottimus Huff. Boom.
Okay, we'll send all your hate tweets to these gentlemen. I don't have a Twitter, but if you want to send one to the podcast directly, that's at Rance Black Lodge. And hopefully you'll only have positive things to say. I know the movie we're going to be tackling tonight is a little bit of a divisive one. And we're certainly not going to sugarcoat things, but I think we're going to be more positive than negative overall. So let's get down to it. If you're a first-time listener to the podcast, feel free to just listen along with us without the including-ness, if that's a word, of watching the movie. But if you want to go full-fledged, you're going to get the best effect if you sync us up. We're going to be watching the unrated cut of Jason Goes to Hell. So we're watching the DVD version, and you'll go to the menu, hit play. It may autoplay. You want to back out, go to the where it says play, and there's an unrated, an R-rated cut. Fuck that R-rated cut. We're watching the unrated version. So what we're going to do is, when we're going to 3, 2, 1, play. When I say play, you hit play. It should be self-explanatory. So, without further ado, happy Friday the 13th in 3, 2, 1, play. This shot right here.
This is the first one, isn't it?
This is the first time that not only that Jason worked for the house that Freddie built, but this is also the first time there was ever a sound attached to the New Line Cinema logo.
Did not know that.
Yeah, evidently that was a mandate from the studio because they wanted a sound anytime they did horror movies to play. So it wasn't made just for this movie. It was going to be across the board.
This is the first one with Sean S. Cunningham coming back, too, since the first one, isn't it?
Yeah, this is with him producing.
Yeah.
Yes. And there is a bit of contention on whether or not he may have directed some scenes, and we'll get into that as the scenes come on. This movie came out in 1993. It had a budget of $3 million. Its theatrical box office was $15.9 million, which for that time was pretty decent. This was the highest grossing horror film of 1993, which is... I don't remember exactly what all came out during that time. Would you fucking stop burping? God damn, you fat fuck. Go out of the room and do your disgusting shit. We're trying to be professional here. Adam Marcus is listening to this right now. By the way, that was a day for night shot.
That's a shirt. I'm telling you, that's a shirt. That's a shirt.
Is it not a shirt yet?
No, it needs to be one for the podcast.
So
that's a day for night shot.
It's our go-to. Like everything.
Man, it's hard to film at nighttime. I mean, you don't take for granted like how many lights you have to put up. This actress, I'm looking her up right now. I have to go through my many amounts of
while you're doing
of
that,
notes.
In 1993, didn't Leprechaun come out in 1993 as well?
Probably, but that wasn't there's no argument. This movie is heads and tails.
Well,
better
I understand that. I'm just talking about horror movies in 1993. I guess we're talking about.
Leprechaun got a very, very limited release.
We actually have real questions. I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, we do have some actual questions. We'll get to those a little later on. Oh my god, I have so many notes. It's hard to keep track of everybody. But this woman, she's playing Agent Marcus. Obviously, they've named her after the director. Her name is Julie Michaels. And she was named after the director, had a Marcus little nod there to the director. She looked familiar to you? Because she's been in quite a few things.
She does look familiar, I just don't know from where.
All right, I guarantee you when
Roadhouse?
Yes.
She's in Roadhouse.
She's the girl that's naked in Roadhouse. And she's in Point Break.
Oh my god!
Yeah, no, that's gonna get you hard right there. Point Break! Oh!
We're gonna do Point Break!
That's
a fucking shirt.
But that's not how I know her. I know her from Dr. Mordred. Dr. Mordred was a Full Moon movie that was supposed to be a Doctor Strange movie, and they lost the rights to call it that.
I'm just saying.
Oh, watch
her strip.
Continuity error. Her bill of her hat was down, now it's up. Sorry, Adam. She was also in Witchboard 2. She was in Batman and Robin. Sorry. And you'll get a kick out of this. She was a groupie in your favorite movie, Scott. Rockstar.
I love that movie.
Yeah, you... Rockstar. Yeah.
It's a great movie.
If you say so. The intent of this beginning scene was to like have all the cliches of like these horror movies, like, you know, one after another. So you've got, you know, the girl getting naked, you know, she stands in front of a mirror, shuts it, but like it's sort of all subverted. Like you think this stuff is, you know, it's leading to scare, and it sort of falls intentionally flat. That way, when Jason shows up here in just a moment, he's things are going to kick into high gear. I guess this would be a good opportunity for everybody to kind of talk about, like, what was the first time you saw this movie?
I was a kid. Like, I was right around like 94. I was like right when it first came on videotape.
Tits. Movie gallery down the road from my house, and every the weekend my dad would let me go pick out a movie to rent for the weekend or whatever, and That cover is awesome.
Tits.
Yes, it is.
It drew my attention immediately, and I saw it like stand up on the wall and grabbed it on VHS.
I would have been like 6.
My mind was blown.
I would have been like 6.
God, like you're a fucking baby.
When I first watched it,
I saw this in the theater with my grandmother.
Must have been awkward seeing tits with your grandma.
My grandmother fucked me up like, in a lot of emotional ways.
Glad you had up to that.
I begged her to take me to see this. Because I mean, I at this point I had seen quite a few of the Friday the 13th movies, but they had all been on television. They were all edited, and I have to say, this beginning scene from the point where they blow him the fuck up, I was done. I begged her to take me out of there, and I didn't see it until it came out on VHS the next year. I made myself watch it. All right, there's a really cool shot coming up. You're gonna see with Agent Marcus. Running right here, she's running in a circle, and they're just moving the camera with her to make it look like she's running forever. It's a smart poor man's process way to film something, but her feet are like serrated because they had to keep doing this over and over to get the coverage. And you know, Adam Marcus was he was a kid when he made this. He was 23 years old, which at that point, and this may even still stand, I'm not 100% sure, but he was the youngest. The youngest person ever hired by a major studio to direct a theatrically released film. He turned 24 on set, but he was 23 when they started.
I have to ask really quick. We kind of saw Kane for the first time as Jason. what do you guys think of Part 9 Jason having hair?
I hated it at the time, but I kind of like it now.
Yeah,
I just like that there's a little tuffet. So yeah, this scene pops up, and I mean, I'm like screaming. Oh my god, what the fuck? I didn't say that as a kid. It was more like, what the fart?
Grandma, what did you take me to?
And I don't know if this record still stands, but at the time, this was the most amount of squibs on a single human being in a movie ever, right here in this one scene. Kane Hodder, respect, my man. He's a badass. He's a fucking teddy bear if you meet him, but... He's a badass, man.
Let's say ICP sucks. And then maybe.
Oh, okay. We have a fundamental disagreement on musical taste. I'm not a...
Oh,
boom!
So freaking cool, his head flying through the air.
I love
That's
this,
an
this,
awesome
this,
shot.
This shot right here is them just dropping. Yep. Well, not here, it's coming up. Where his head drops, it's going to pop. That's going to be them literally just dropping it right here. Boom. It's obvious they just dropped it right... Okay, Jason's beating heart. That prop, I believe it's, they made a couple Brain of them. Nuke. There's one where the corner eats a little later, but I think it's that one specifically right there is, was reused in From Dusk Till Dawn later on.
The one they stab with the pencil?
Maybe. I don't remember specifically, but
it's Savini, isn't it?
Yeah.
I believe so, yeah.
Savini stabs it with the pencil.
Which is kind of apropos.
Sex Machine, I think it was. Yes. Oh,
yeah. Or wait a minute. Or was he Sex Shooter?
No, he's Sex Machine.
Sex Machine?
He was Sex Machine.
Sex Shooter is a better name.
He had the gun.
I actually enjoy the score of this one.
Well, I'm going to... That's one of the things I'm going to take to task. I love Harry Manfredini's score. And I like the score overall. I do not like this opening music. It's too bombastic. I don't know. It just doesn't have a...
Well, you just saw it was a Michael Bay opening. You saw those explosions?
You got to think of the time, dude. It's 93. So 93, like, it's just that time everything's changing. Like,
oh,
the music
there's
scene's
Kane.
Changing. And it's weird to see Kane with a mullet.
It's the early 90s. Everybody
no,
a mullet.
It is not. No, it is not weird.
My achy, breaky heart.
Everybody had a mullet back then.
This gentleman here, is he the same? No, it's not the same guy. Well, he's in some other things, too. I cannot figure out what he's in.
The guy or the black guy?
Black guy.
Black guy's in a lot of things. I recognize him from a lot of things, but I can't name a single one.
You know, had it wrote down, and
I know the guy who plays Creighton Duke later went on.
Name is Richard Grant, and,
John D. LeMay.
He was George Washington Duke in Rocky V. That's like
that's where I thought he was from. Yeah. Touch me and I'll sue
but,
you. Oh, yes, that's where I thought he was from. I thought that was him.
He was also in The Freshman with Marlon Brando, which is that's pretty fucking cool. Cell Block 4, The Glimmer Man, Big
Billy
Lebowski.
Greenbush. I wish that was mine.
Billy Greenbush, that's a fucking awesome
that
name,
a,
is
a
it not?
Name right there.
He was in 5 Easy Pieces. He plays the sheriff in the movie. That's sort of his claim to fame. And Yeah, Billy Greenbush. We'll get to him. I literally
Rusty Schwimmer.
Oh, she's awesome, as is Leslie Jordan. But Billy Greenbush, in my notes, I literally wrote down awesome fucking name. He was in The Hitcher, Critters, Five Easy Pieces, like I said, his claim to fame.
Drunk Scott, like, takeaway right there. That's a fucking cool name.
Well, it is a cool name. Billy Greenbush in Jason Goes to Hell.
I love that he's still smoking.
I love this shot right here.
So, as Adam Marcus, did he write this film and direct it, or is he just a director?
He and Dean Laurie ended up kind of coming up with the story ideas. Dean Laurie actually wrote the script. There's an interesting story about that. They were coming to the deadline of production, like to get the movie into production, to get the green light from New Line, and they had a script written by a guy by the name of Jay Hughley. Now, according to Sean Cunningham and other people who read it, it was a flaming turd. I mean, like, it dealt with... Jason wasn't even in the movie. It was about Jason's brother, Elias, and they ended up recycling that as, like, the name of Jason's father later on in the movie. But on a Thursday, the deadline was Friday, Sean called up Dean Laurie and was like, "Hey, I need your help. We've got to get this script..."
K&B FX.
Yes, K&B.
It's so weird to see the full name. Yeah. Says K&B. That's awesome.
Yes, the effects in this movie are a standout. I would say that the best practical effects in a horror movie in the 90s, this movie. Because
overall?
Because really, what else is there?
There's not a whole one.
There wasn't really a lot of good horror movies in the 90s, so...
Well, if there were good effects in the 90s, it was done by K&B.
Yes.
Almost almost guaranteed. But Dean Laurie, the guy who wrote this, he's actually going to be showing up. He's the coroner's assistant. He's a producer now on Arrested Development, which is a great fucking show. And I think he may have written some episodes. But he and Adam Marcus went to NYU together. And he wrote really, really popular script that had kind of bounced around, called Johnny Zombie. Well, it got turned into the movie My Boyfriend's Back.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie, right? Adam Marcus was supposed to direct that, but they were apprehensive because it was produced by Disney to let a first-time director helm it. Bob Balaban directed that movie. You may recognize Bob Balaban from a lot of Christopher Guest movies. He was Seinfeld, and, you know, a little guy, glasses. You'd know him if you saw him. The cool thing about Dean Laurie, which I'm sure both of you might get a good kick out of, in addition to writing, he also had a small role in Major Payne.
I love that movie.
Here's something else. We're going down the rabbit hole. Do you know who directed Major Payne? Prepare to have your fucking mind blown. Nick Castle directed Major Payne, a.k.a. Michael
Myers.
Fucking Myers.
Michael Myers directed Major Payne.
Exactly. Does that not blow your mind?
It's pretty crazy.
I know he like worked on stuff, but like,
there's no way.
It's true. It's true, man. It's true. I did my homework.
What is his heart made out of that he's about to take a chunk out of his teeth?
I think it's gelatin, and it's got...
Something they did for like the Game of Thrones, eating hearts.
Probably, and then there's like fruit cup of black... food coloring in it, and later on he's going to be taking some bites out of it, and it's really disgusting. The R-rated cut, he has maybe like a bite and a half.
He goes to fucking town
on this thing, and to his credit, like he nearly threw up. Like, I mean, he was like disgusted by it, but
she did throw up.
He championed through it. I like the sound design a lot in this movie.
He's being possessed by the evil.
He's sitting there looking at it like, is this really happening? And then all of a sudden it just overcomes him.
Well, okay. This is all just body language.
Well, I know the thing that worked with everybody that played Jason,
Yeah, and they adapt.
Finger quotes.
They adapt his mannerisms and stuff.
They directly told them how to play him.
But right now, I'm sure in the script it just says, mesmerized by heart. It's probably really vague.
My favorite part of the entire scene was right there, right before he went into it, like, fuck it. Let's go.
That's it.
There he is. He's like, oh, fuck. I'm gonna puke. Oh, I'm gonna eat. Okay.
If you watch him, he's not really
eating. Eat it like a piece of cake. Callback.
That last one, he you could tell he took a bite of it, but he wasn't really biting any of it.
Babies.
I haven't thought about Nice Peter in a long time.
That's why I paused my head. Oh, yeah. Eat your heart out,
okay, Gene. There's a really subtle effect here on the neck. That's a bladder under a throat appliance, and they're just pumping a little bit of air in there, so it's like, it's like gestating in his... These sounds, a lot of these sounds in the movie, like the ADR... was done by Adam Marcus himself. In fact, every time you see Jason and he makes a grunt, that's Adam Marcus. So, in a small way,
Adam Marcus
was Jason. Very, very indirect way. So, I guess it might be... That's Dean Laurie right there. And, of course, we've got Kane behind him and this guy who was hired because he bared somewhat of a slight resemblance to Elvis, evidently.
I see it.
Uh-huh. Really go inside now.
She looks more like, what's that guy? Billy Zane is actually what I thought of her then.
What an interesting direction, sort of after the fact. What if, instead of body hopping into the coroner, what if he had body hopped
into
Kane Hodder? That way he could have still played Jason, but not. I think that would have been really cool. Because Kane really in the past few years has got to do more acting.
Yeah.
And he's actually pretty good. Like, if you've seen Hatchet 2, he plays
Victor's dad.
Victor Crowley's father, and he's got a really emotional scene. Plus, he gets to fuck this girl, and he's crying while he's doing it. I mean, like, that's some good stuff.
Talking shit to a corpse right now. Love it.
Yes, that's a probe. It's a funny one. Big old mango-sized shit. Yes, that's a probe.
I like how his glasses just plopped right off.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, I was going to get into this a little earlier. The way that Adam Marcus got this job is he grew up, like, good friends with Noel Cunningham, who is... This is a cool effect.
Yep.
He grew up best friends with Noel Cunningham, who is the son of Sean S. Cunningham, and he had been on set for like one of the earlier Friday the 13th films, and so it was sort of like a family thing. And
what number, big old pussy anyway?
Yeah. Okay, I love this right here. We're going to show pictures of the coroner and stuff, and
it's literally
just shots from the movie. Dead.
That's literally dead.
Missy.
Okay, this gentleman doing the voiceover they're about to show, his name is Stephen Culp. He's been in a lot of fucking stuff, but he's not related to Robert Culp, but he gets hired a lot because he looks more like Robert Culp than Robert Culp's actual sons, who are actors.
But...
His big claims to fame, he was the dad in James and the Giant Peach, and he played Robert Kennedy, which I can absolutely see in 13 Days. He's been in, like, 24. He was in 41 episodes of JAG, which is a terrible fucking show that old people watch. Cosby Show, Murphy Brown, L.A. Law, Sisters with John D. LeMay, so there's another roundabout connection. 90210, Ally McBeal, ER, CSY, and he was in 9 episodes of The West Wing. All right, this is Creighton Duke's compound. This is the back lot of, I want to say Universal, but over that fence is where they shot The Wonder Years.
Oh my God.
No. This was just one of those, it isn't even a location, they just needed someplace.
This is like the one thing, like everybody has 3 agreements on this movie, even if you hate this movie. The beginning's awesome. The end is amazing, and Creighton Duke is one of the coolest characters ever.
He's awesome. He's awesome, but like some of his dialogue and stuff like doesn't make sense in the context of even this movie. Yeah. I have the unrated work print of this movie, which has never been commercially released, and it has all the deleted scenes. And his reason for hunting down Jason is that it was his sister or girlfriend, either one. But they're out on the lake, and Jason capsized their boat, drags her down, and he spent like all this time like indirectly, not really going after Jason, but like becoming a bounty hunter with the intent, like, one day I'm going to get my hands on that motherfucker, and this is sort of...
coming full circle.
Which, you know, oddly enough, we just today found out that Adam Marcus, director of this movie, is pursuing and developing a Creighton Duke spinoff. I don't know with the lawsuit, like, if it's even feasible, but if it is, I mean, I'd be willing to check it out, because, I mean, I think probably he's probably too old to play the role, but they could recast him with a younger actor. By the way, Creighton Duke is played by Steven Williams.
He was just on Supernatural. We were just talking about
he's
that.
He's always on Supernatural. He's one of the main hunters.
He's
best friends with Bobby.
Yep.
He's from Tennessee. He's a good old Tennessee boy. He only appeared in this movie if he could dress like a cowboy. That was his, like, I'll be in the movie, but I gotta dress like a cowboy. Which is fucking awesome. You know, one of the things that I'm kind of known for is being able to connect any movie
to Ghostbusters.
To Ghostbusters.
Oh, God.
Well, this just became a lot easier. Steven Williams was in the Blues Brothers with Dan Aykroyd.
He's a cop.
He's a cop, yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm going to catch that sucker.
All right. He's in Dr. Detroit with Dan Aykroyd. He's in Twilight Zone, the movie, with Dan Aykroyd. Awesome. And he was in the movie House, not with Dan Aykroyd. The movie, not that terrible show. But he's probably best known for his roles. He was in like 97 episodes with Johnny Depp in 21 Jump Street. He was X in the X-Files. It's how I knew him growing up. And he's kind of come full circle. He's done some episodes of iZombie with Dean Laurie, who's a writer for that show.
iZombie. Is that
Who cares? It's Supernatural. Yeah.
All right, the
Pookie.
No, okay. This is what I'm about to say is gonna fall dead on people who have no idea who I'm talking about. This is an inside thing. But doesn't that fat fuck standing back there they were just showing remind you of Osicky?
Oh my God, he does.
Sorry, Greg Osicky, you fat fuck.
What are you apologizing for?
It was weird that scene. Is that Rusty? Was that her name?
Rusty Schwimmer. Yes.
So when she just walked through, I know she looked just like Divine for a second. It threw me for a while.
And her husband is Leslie Jordan. Originally in the script, their characters were flipped. Like she was supposed to play his role, and she was supposed to play his role. But she was so good and like being assertive and stuff that they flipped them. And
it's
I think
a big woman.
It worked. It works on screen. And Greg Osicky just ties it all together.
She's been in a ton of things. She was in Highlander 2, Sleepwalkers, Candyman, Twister, and probably the funniest episode of Louie, if you've seen Louis C.K. I think she's like Louis's sister or Louis's friend. I mean, episode's really fucking funny. But that's beside the point. Leslie Jordan has been in a fucking ton of things. He usually plays kind of a
Cunningham County Sheriff.
Yeah, that's a nice little.
There's several of those throughout this movie. Little nods.
Coming full circle with Sean Cunningham coming back. See the cop back there?
Yeah, both those guys turn into Jason.
The younger cop, that's Kip Marcus. That's Adam's brother. He was actually up for John DeLamay's role as Stephen Freeman, who's sitting at the bar right there with the glasses on, but they wouldn't allow him to cast him because of like nepotism reasons. And I think they made the right choice. I think that John D. LeMay is pretty damn good,
and it has a cool tie in with Friday the 13th, the series.
That is, he's the only person to have appeared in both. That actually may not be true. Now that I'm thinking about it, I think John Shepard, who was Tommy in Part 5. Maybe in an episode, but I think John DeLamay is the only one of note, I guess, would be the better way to put it. So
this whole situation is kind of weird because I know they never really talk about the backstory with him and Diana's daughter, like why they separated. I don't think they ever mention it, do they?
No, it's sort of left ambiguous, and he's never seen his daughter, and it's the sort of.
And it's kind of weird that would have been his wife's mom. He's just talking to, so it's kind of weird that she's okay with him being there, but the daughter's not. It's kind of strange. I never really thought of that.
Yeah,
I'm a parent now, I guess.
Oh, you see things through the eyes of a loving parent. This scene right here was done in reshoots. They test screened the movie, and for most part, it got pretty decent reactions. But people were like, "There's no campers in this movie," and all that was sort of done on purpose. They wanted to subvert everybody's expectations. Well, they had some money left over, and unfortunately, this is one of the things. Maybe Adam's age was a detriment to the movie. No one was checking dailies when they were filming this. So they filmed all these scenes and, like, you know, dialogue and backstory and stuff, and it ended up being non-usable. So when they did reshoots, they reshot a lot of stuff.
Premarital sex.
I love that. Smoking a little dope, having some premarital sex, and getting slaughtered. It's like, I love that line.
Yes, minus the slaughtering part. But they decided they were going to, you know, do some reshoots out of necessity and to throw these campers in here. These two campers have sort of an interesting history with one another. The girl in the back, her name is Michelle Clooney, and the guy is named Michael B. Silver. Now, they had dated one another for years. They had been broken up for a while, and they got cast independently of one another. And they get together and are like, oh, fuck. Now we're going to have to do a love scene together.
Yep.
Well, being sort of a rambunctious fella, Michael was like trying to convince them it would be a good idea if he had sex with both of them in the tent, which would have been the first three-way in a Friday the 13th movie. And I think today would be the only one. How has that not fucking happened? This salacious series. Somebody needs to write that in.
Adam Marcus
in that Creighton Duke spinoff. Have him fucking a couple of broads in a bed, you know,
or a sleeping bag.
And a sleeping bag. I was gonna say Dolomite style, but Shaft works too. Michelle Clooney, she's had a pretty successful career. She was in The Usual Suspects. I think she's on Teen Wolf, that MTV show that's terrible, has nothing to do with the awesome movie.
I think it canceled.
Oh, good.
Good.
Well, I'm fine with that.
There's only one fine team. Well, two. Jason Bateman and goddamn Michael J. Fox.
No.
That doesn't fucking count.
No, they box. It's a boxing wolf. It's
no. Okay. It's terrible.
But what she's most known for is that she was in 83 episodes of Queer as Folk. So that's sort of her claim to fame. Michael B. Silver, his IMDb is pretty long, too. He was in Suits, Shameless, ER, Seabiscuit, I Am Sam, Legally Blonde.
Yes.
Also in The X-Files. A lot of these people have been in The X-Files, which is awesome because it's one of my favorite shows of all time. It's kind of cool seeing like all these actors,
man,
and they've all been in the same things. This,
oh, man, almost
that's
some
what
cock.
Has to be
oh,
popular.
Okay.
Yeah. Some cock there.
The quote, I can't remember if it was Adam or Dean who says this, but they were like, they're wanting to put more male nudity in the movie.
She went all the time. You never
yeah,
seen that.
And the way they put this is like, how much of the penis can they show? It's like, you can show pickle, but you can't show angry pickle. Which made me die laughing.
I'm gonna stop calling angry pickle.
Hey Bree, come check out my angry pickle.
You know, they shot this movie with the intent of releasing an unrated cut on VHS
because it was starting to get popular around then.
Well. And, you know, Laserdisc technology was kind of becoming prevalent. And even though, I mean, like, I had this on VHS in unrated form. But these movies have been so lambasted and cut to fucking pieces by the MPAA that they just, out of necessity, you know, they had to either really tone them down and just hope that there was enough in there. Or they made the smart choice of, like, we're going to go fucking balls to the wall.
Now, I am going to call bullshit. If I was that guy, I totally would have tried. Like, she's already naked. I'm naked. Let's just get her in the tent. She's got to sleep outside. Come on.
She can sleep in here.
Yeah, she can sleep in here.
She can watch.
He wanted to.
They should have. That would have been a perfect time. If that was me, I would have went for that threesome.
I'm wondering, would that, even though, like, it would have been, you know, not, you know, like, blatant, but, like, would that have gotten them an X rating?
Probably.
Just because of the implement.
Well, when they went on the chin, like, all you can see is shadows.
Oh, okay, we're about to see some full on.
Yeah, especially this scene coming up with unrated is fucking amazing.
It is. It's probably some of Canby's best work. It's probably the most brutal kill in all of the Friday 13th movies. That's, and that's saying, it's a saying something, because, you know, the harpoon to the guy's dick in part four, slash down the crotch in part three, my favorite kill, handicapped guy yep. getting waxed in the face because he wanted
rolling
to get his...
Rolling downstairs.
Hey, your legs don't work. Your dick still does. Got to do something about that. By the way...
She's pretty hot, too.
She is pretty hot.
She's very attractive. She's got, like, the... There's, like... I know they have makeup on, but they're doing the bare minimalist thing. She's still really pretty.
Oh, God!
She...
This is a lot longer than I remember, too.
Where she went and peed, this other girl is literally going to go pee in the exact same spot.
It's a pee spot, dude. Slip it.
And that wasn't Adam's decision. Evidently, that was, like, Sean's decision, because he found, like, it to be sort of, like, weirdly poetic. Like, they'll piss in the same place and they'll die.
I remember they're talking about this scene, the Crystal Ignorance, why I know the story, but it's like, I don't know if I'd be able to fake it with one of my exes that I've dated for a long time. I don't...
Try and slide it in. It's like,
I like how he...
Slide it in! Sorry. My wife's making home for the night.
You're a really hairy ass.
Well,
sorry, I'm just observing.
Are you saying you shave yours?
I do.
Ah, I can figure you shave yours like
yours. Your mom likes it nice and bare.
Smooth as eggs.
She's really into a fart play.
Oh, right.
She wears
baby powder in it,
yeah,
green cheeks.
Yeah. She wears my ass like a catcher's mitt. Oh, Buffy.
Like, she works you like a puppet, or how does that work?
No, I just sit on her face and just...
What if, like, a... Oh, fart, catch
her. I fucking shotgun right in her mouth. Oh.
Bitch dead.
Hey.
Hey, you're dead, bitch. Okay. One of the...
Ew, condoms?
Yes, this... This scene got... I think it was the New York... Wall Street Journal, when they reviewed this movie, and she throws the condom away, and the Jason Corner is about to step on it, their quote, "A return to morality in cinema," Wall Street Journal, and that was done, it was done purposely to sort of redirect, and the, you know, like,
and then we're gonna have the sex.
If you have sex, you do drugs, Jason is going to kill you. And some of the movies had kind of stayed to that, and some of them had not. Yes, boobies.
Well, I tell Cass, like, all the time, I'm like, "Is Jason going to get me?" I'm like, "No, as long as you don't have sex or do drugs, son, he will not bother you."
Jason won't kill a kid.
No, that's what I told him to do.
He might
it's
kill
you. Canon. He will not kill a child.
He might kill your kid. He's pretty annoying.
That's true.
I mean, if I was Jason, sorry, Cass.
I think this is probably the most realistic sex scene in a Friday movie as well.
No, you know what the most realistic sex scene in Friday the 13th history is? The one in part 5 where the guy lasts 2 seconds with Deborah Voorhees,
yes,
and her luscious jugs.
Oh my God.
He's in and out.
I was going to say the reboot where, like, the chick is on top of me, has that terrible line, "Your tits are stupendous."
No, yeah, no.
That is one of the worst lines ever.
Oh, purple, purple. Perfect nipple placement, baby.
There's some terrible.
No, this is the most realistic sex scene, though.
You got pretty nice boobies.
Tits.
Here we go.
Here it comes.
Oh! Yeah. Should have wore that rubber. You'd be alive right now.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so...
Here we go.
The R-rated cut of this is so unsatisfying. This cut, the unrated cut...
Brandon's already there.
No, I'm shooting. I'm gonna shoot! Oh!
Fuck. Wait.
She's twitching.
Oh, God, that's awesome.
That is one of the coolest freaking puppets ever. I love that so much, the way that cuts off of the side.
You know, when they
falls.
When they live cast her, like, I mean, she had to be, like, in that position.
Yeah,
like, gotta be, like, really, really uncomfortable.
They still have the live cast, too, if you watch the, they did that Nightmare Factory thing. And then, like,
yeah, I love that. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, you can actually see that live cast still on the back.
Is that still on Netflix?
It's not anymore.
I don't think it is, but I would highly suggest if you like
anything horror,
special effects, horror, check that documentary out. It's really good.
Is that the one where Greg Nicotero shit talks John Carpenter? About Ghost of Mars?
No.
I think it is.
No.
Yeah, because he kept saying he hates it when directors keep scaling stuff back.
Oh, yes,
do.
Yes, that is. Sorry.
All right, John Carpenter's my favorite director of all time, but he is a grumpy old fuck.
Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks is fucking awesome.
That's my favorite director of all time. I know.
What the fuck does that have to do with John Carpenter?
You said John Carpenter's your favorite director. I told you Mel Brooks is my favorite director. Who's yours, Eddie, while we're going around the room?
Just threw me in a loop. I don't know.
you don't know who your favorite director is of all time?
I don't know.
I don't. I can say here. Zemeckis is probably up there. I can tell you that.
By the way, not to interrupt, that's Sean Cunningham's dog.
That's a good puppy. That's a good puppy.
Well, I feel like the consistency of a lot of directors is just there's really not there. I mean, like John Carpenter, Robert Zemeckis,
Mel Brooks.
Oh yeah,
Quentin Tarantino.
I'm more of a fan of Tarantino's writing than I am his directing.
I do really, really enjoy him in From Dusk Till Dawn. I know it's a
I love him as an actor. He's Knoxville boy. Okay, this guy right here, he's playing Josh. His name's Andrew Block. He's been in quite a few things. He teaches acting now, and I don't know if this is one of the movies I guess he really cites because his acting is pretty limited. This is one of the few times you actually get to see him acting. The rest of the time, he's possessed, and there's going to be some weird homoerotic shaving coming up.
We gotta talk about that scene.
Oh, we will. I'm going to both damn it and celebrate it. Because if you take nothing away from this movie, you're not gonna fucking forget the homoerotic shaving scene.
It's up there with was it Nightmare 2, the whipping?
Yes, the ass.
Ass with the towels and shit.
I can't wait to do that movie, by the way.
Nightmare on Elm Street 2?
I love Nightmare. It's on my fucking wall right there. I love it.
I just assumed because you had the poster, you weren't hanging it up.
I've never noticed this as a kid, so I watched it later on when it actually crushes her head.
This is a fucking. Oh, yeah. It's a piece of foam. Pillow. It's a piece of foam.
I thought it was a pillow. Damn. Is it folds?
Okay,
over?
Voorhees is misspelled. There's two O's in Voorhees. Okay, now.
Here we go.
When I saw this movie all the way through.
It has legs and stirrups and shit. It's just awful, man. Oh my god.
The stirrups make sense considering the demon later on, but go ahead, Brandon.
It's gotta go in.
Yeah, shake your hand. Shake your hand. I can't do it.
Why does he shave him in places? Why does he shave him at all?
Well, the thing that doesn't make sense is he already has a mustache. Is he just doesn't want to, like, I don't understand
he
it.
He's not pulling it off as well.
I think he was like, I'm not jumping in this dude's body if I'm going to look like a fucking kitty diddler.
I might kill some people, but I don't fuck children.
He has a soft spot for children. He doesn't put...
Definitely doesn't have a hard spot.
He doesn't put things in soft spots of children. This is my defense of this. Does this fit a Friday the 13th movie? No. But is this effective? And I can tell you, as like a 9-year-old kid watching this... I had nightmares about this. I mean, this bothered me for a long time.
And they make it very ambiguous there, too. It's like, is he fucking him? what's he doing?
He tongue, yeah.
We gotta think he's butt naked. Like, why would you take it? But it ain't gonna make any sense. And then he gets back his clothes. Exact same clothes when he shows up here. It didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Maybe he's just interested. Maybe it's been so long since Jason saw what a normal penis looked like. He's like, yeah, I'm good with what I got. This is Carrie Keegan, I believe her name is, playing the role of Jessica Campbell. Her really only other claim to fame was that she was in Jerry Maguire, small role. And she has a few credits, but pretty limited.
Hey, man, shave my mustache off. Made out with a dude. Come on close. Come on close.
How's your Friday night?
Button your shirt back up, dude. Like... Is it? It's like after the same. After the scene we just saw, it's kind of unsettling that like you put.
You just walk around butt naked.
Well, I mean, like that would have been pretty fucking unsettling.
Eggs.
But
there it is.
It's like why dress up in a uniform if you're? I mean, like have a little respect, Jason.
He's a
Jesus.
Cop.
He's a cop, not a cop.
He's a cop.
So, the scene we just had with Jessica talking to her mother on the phone, that's a cool effect.
Yes, it is.
I love the push-in right there on her face, too.
Get it done.
But,
damn you, Manfredini! Try to hear that.
I will say that it's so much more effective, too, when the blood, you start to see the blood flow in the unrated cut.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's when he stands up and it starts pouring down. I want to say it's
even. Well, you can see like there was a piece of his brain. Yeah, kind of
like
flew.
Seeing the actual shit fly out the side.
By the way, Diana Kimball, I believe is her name. The character it's Erin Gray. She best known for
right here.
Oh yeah. That's really good. It's nice and black and goopy.
Hitting the carpet, all of that.
But, yeah, she's playing Diana Kimball, who is Jason's, I guess, half-sister. It's to believe they have different fathers, but the same mother. I don't know. Actually, it's kind of ambiguous. It's not really laid out. That's more so, like, fan belief. But she was Colonel Wilma Deering in Buck Rogers, and she's considered to be one of the original sci-fi MILFs. Like,
she's still fucking hot in this.
Dude, there's... Well, I saw some pictures of her, like, recently, and she's held up pretty well for...
This is one of my... this is something I like about this movie compared to other Friday 13th, and I have a lot of problems with this movie, that I do like the main character, the main guy.
John D. LeMay.
He takes an ass-whooping in this movie.
Yes,
the cool
does.
Thing I never realized about that either is that, you know, that's like what you hold your hand in place with. It wasn't even a sharp object. It was just blunt.
This shot right here, that's literally just him standing behind. And you can actually see his eye under the cloth.
That's amazing.
That's one of those things, like, you shoot for film, and, like, it looks fine on VHS, and you get it on DVD, and you're like, wow, the quality is so much better, you can see. But in that shot, you can tell it's not a reflection, because the eye cut of the mask on the side was on the wrong side. But... poor man's process, you know, you're making a movie for nothing. He was actually hurting her right here because
was he sticking the piece in?
Yeah, it's like just it's attached in like a harness in her back, and every time he would lay her down it would poke her, and so her pained reactions are quite real.
Yeah, she definitely doesn't look her age in this.
How old is she in this movie?
Well, I just go by the guy that she was dating, like the other cop in the movie.
Yeah, Billy Greenbush. Fucking awesome name. See, here he is. God damn it! You killed her. And of course he's fucking gone. You never...
It's the Halloween ending.
Yeah, you never like, knock a villain out of a window and expect him to stay there.
Like, I don't understand how he immediately believes it's Steven when Steven was there holding her. And there's black blood on the ground. Like,
let's die, man.
He's emotionally wrecked right now. That's his lover. That's where he parks his penis on the rig.
He did.
Well, I don't know what he does in his spare time. I just gotta state this for the record. Erin Gray, I can connect her to Ghostbusters.
Oh my god!
And I didn't know this until I was doing research, but she was the voice of the Spider Witch in the Ghostbusters video game, which is pretty fucking cool.
Which video game?
The Ghostbusters video game.
The good one.
Yeah, that was like basically the third movie.
Yes, the good one.
The good one.
I just want to state a fact too. Most crime scenes won't allow just someone to do this. You have to be, like, professionally hired to do this.
Yeah.
And she has no gloves on. Oh, she does. Okay, she does have a glove on.
Weren't you going to take a CSI cleanup job at one time?
I would love to have that job.
I would. I've seen pictures, and it just seems like it needs to like, I'm so OCD that it would drive me crazy.
I've seen, like...
I don't like cleaning regularly. Why the fuck would I want to clean up somebody's shit?
So, dead people don't really bother me. Gore doesn't bother me at all. So, I love that.
Gore in movies don't bother me. But like, I don't want to see somebody spilled anus goo and innards like all about.
So, who is this actress?
Baby?
No,
I don't fucking know.
I don't know.
She didn't.
She's pretty.
That chick?
She's very cute. She's very cute. But I didn't know her age, so I was kind of stepping on very carefully.
Well, hey,
this was the early 90s. The girls looked their appropriate age. It wasn't until early 2000.
And I was going to say, I'm pretty sure she's legal now. You don't have anything to worry about.
Like we talk about Danielle Harris.
Okay, my crush on Danielle Harris was appropriate at the time because I was that age.
Well, I was a kid too. I mean, I was that.
It isn't like you're watching Halloween 4 now and be like, oh my god, Jamie, I'm gonna shoot.
No, that's how I'm in Rob Zombie's Halloween. We want to know why?
That's
tits.
It made that movie worth existing.
It did.
How do you feel about Danielle Harris not being acknowledged in the new movie? I know they kind of retconned Jamie and everything.
I'm okay with it. I feel like a lot of people view...
Oh, okay, sorry. I interrupt you. All right. Prepare to have your fucking mind blown. This woman right there, the cop, the female cop.
Yeah.
She is reprising her role. I can't think of the character's name, but she's reprising the exact same role that she played in Die Hard for this movie. The part where John McClane...
Bullshit.
I'm being 100% serious with you. The part where he's on the roof and he calls the cops and it gets the person's like, you have to call on a secure line.
Yeah.
That's her. And she's reprising her same role. She was the script supervisor on this movie. And...
She's had the cop uniform just laying around.
Well, no, they did that intentionally as a way of saying, like, this movie is in continuity.
Die Hard.
Exist in the same universe... as Die Hard. Blew my fucking mind when I
want to say real quick that they I feel like they've upped their sheriff's department compared to part 6 when he just had
what's changed? They got a budget now.
Her by the way, that the actress, her name is Harry James. She was the script supervisor on this movie, and she was in Maniac Cop 3, Pumpkinhead 2, Puppet Master 5. But I mean, she's a pretty well known script supervisor. Most of the movies she's done, that's what she's been in there for. But she was an actress in Die Hard, played the role of a cop, same part in this movie.
Here's one of the most random scenes in anything ever. Breaks his damn fingers or whatever.
Oh, for the info.
You have to pay.
It's dumb.
When he takes his hand in just a minute. If you notice, he kind of has sort of like a, almost sort of a, how do I phrase this?
I love that he's wearing bloody blue jeans in fucking jail right now.
They don't have a CSI team.
They would put him in scrubs or something.
There's no,
that'd be used as evidence.
The cops have done a really shitty job in this area over the years.
Yeah.
Well, not to mention that, but fucking Diana's body was taken from the fucking morgue.
Yeah.
With no question.
Didn't they have, like, the whole fucking FBI there a couple minutes ago? Like, when they blew his ass up, now it's gone?
They blew town, man.
Yeah. They blew Jason, they blew town.
And by the way, where they're at, and I don't, this is a logistical thing, this is supposed to take place in, like, Green Valley, New Jersey. But where they take him to the morgue, I think that's supposed to be like Youngstown, Ohio. So it's one of those like him traveling over a great distance.
No, man, we've literally played the game. He just teleported.
It's one of the dumbest things ever. He does a Marty Skrull here.
But look how he touches him. This is creepy.
There's a lot of homoerotica going on here.
A lot of male seduction in this one.
And without the prologue of him talking about, you know, his sister, like, it may have been sister or girlfriend. I can't remember. But without that stuff.
Adam Marcus, correct us if you listen to this.
Yes, please. Was it sister or was it his lover?
We could be lovers.
I feel like a more demanding, if you wanted to pay, like, you'd have him blow him.
Well, it is jail.
It's only county. You know what they do in the county? Toss the salad.
You want some smokes?
Cock meat sandwich.
When the sound editor, when they did the first pass, this guy, he was missing some fingers, the guy who was the sound editor on this movie. And it's not funny. And while you're laughing, you horrible human being. And he had the sound of the of him breaking his fingers at like a realistic level. And Adam was like, "No, man, you got to crank that shit up."
I want to hear that pop.
And his explanation is like, "I fucking know what it sounds like when you have your fingers broke."
He's like, "My bad."
But Adam persisted, and they cranked it up. And when they did the test screening for this, people were like, fucking, you know, buttholes clenched, you know, white knuckling. And I have to say, that sound is effective.
Because if you ever watch Pete Dunne, he does this little number.
You hear the pop every time. Believe me, I've watched a lot of Pete Dunne matches. Bray.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Not at all. We're all a bunch of wrestling marks on top of loving our blood and guts, if we haven't made that clear.
Yep.
So there was a Topps comics adaptation of Jason Goes to Hell. Oddly enough, I do not own it. That's not for lack of desire. It's just it's kind of hard to find now. But it bridges the gap between Jason Takes Manhattan, and it kind of explains like why the FBI is on his trail and the sting operation, which
I have to do his head off in Vancouver. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
By the way, that guy's name was Julius.
This one's on the house.
But they turn him back into it. Wait. So they explain how he goes from being a mutated baby child in a sewer back to being a grown-ass man?
Did he become a mutated baby child? Or was that her hallucinating? Because she hallucinates the whole movie. By the way, her pronouns, pal. Oh, Rennie is the name. She was named after Rennie Harlan.
She still aged pretty good as well.
Oh, yeah.
I think Jenny's age the best, guys. I'm just saying.
Jenny Fields. Amy fucking Steele. My favorite final girl. I think we've been over this, who our favorite final girl is.
Tina's mom.
I don't know, man. Megan! It's pretty hot. Megan! She looks great. She looks great now, too.
The fucking padlock. You want to look up you? One of you. I can't talk. Would one of you look up the questions we were?
Yeah.
I had my mouth full of candy.
Mouth full of something.
Yeah.
Born and reborn.
Peanuts and pretzels.
You know what though? Like he, you know, you said that's Adam Marks' brother. Like I love him in this fucking movie. The fight, the fight scene they have here a little bit is fucking amazing. I love it.
He's great.
I broke my damn hand, man.
Boom. Kip Marcus is his name.
Oh.
His other claim to fame, and I didn't know the show even existed, but he was on the new Leave It to Beaver. He played Ward Cleaver 100 episodes. He was like a kid.
Was it on like TNT or some shit?
I have no idea. I mean, this was like the 80s.
Cleavage?
Really?
Yeah, no clue. Another kind of interesting fact about this movie, while Eddie's getting his shit together.
I'm fucking pulling
this
it
is,
up.
This is the only movie in the series where Jason's mask does not come off.
Well, it's because it's stuck to his freaking face. It's grown around his mask.
And there's only two scenes where Jason is in the movie. Hey, but that's beside
the point. The ending of this movie is so over the top that I love it so much. And the fact that they fight through a jungle gym.
By the way,
the ending or the ending?
No,
just save it. It's coming up. We'll go talk to it. I'm gonna bring that jungle gym up. I got some stuff to talk about it.
Oh, here's the while we're talking about Pookie here. One of my favorite scenes is coming up when he's trying to cock the gun.
Holy crap, that is Greg Osicki.
Yeah, it really does look like him. By the way,
a trench coat on him.
I don't know the actor's name, but he was Adam Marcus's like one of his like childhood friends, and he was like sleeping on their couch at the time, so they gave him a role, which is really cool.
He plays the part very well too. And she actually has one of the cool death scenes of this movie as well.
Oh my god, yes,
it's amazing.
The backhand, the prosthetic with her mouth sunk in. I've got a lot to talk about his death scene as well.
I thought it was supposed to be like he hit her here and her mouth.
I thought he elbowed her.
Yeah, I thought it
was supposed to, like the jaw breaking up and going up.
Yeah, it's like,
well,
sunk
like
in.
When we get there, you'll see when she sells it, because she's like, and she falls. Here's the questions, guys. Judd,
wait,
fuck
you.
Right now? He told me to look him up.
Yeah, look him up.
Right now? Okay.
First of all, the first one's from Judd Kelly, and fuck you, Judd, because that's a running joke, and it's going to keep going.
Yeah, Judd.
Fuck you, Judd.
If you could rewrite the ending to the Friday the 13th franchise, what would the climatic ending be, and would it be climatic? Fuck you, Joe. Kind of question.
Yeah, he intentionally, there was that scene you were talking about with him cogging again.
Jesus, Pookie. He's taping his
fingers. By the way, he tapes his fingers right here, and later on, he fights Jason.
No, nothing.
And, like, okay. Yeah, I mean, like, well, no, I mean, I think the tape's still there, but, like, he's not selling that his hands broke.
The adrenaline going, man. Adrenaline, yeah. Something.
Well,
the question is,
if you could rewrite the ending to the franchise, what would it be?
Like the definitive end.
For me, this is the ending. Like, I've made it pretty clear that Freddy versus Jason.
No, we've talked
is
about that.
Is the worst of the series.
It was the worst out of both. Probably both franchises. It was weaker than
the remake. It's terrible. Yeah.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
We won't count that of the
original movie.
That's a reboot. That's not Robert
Englund. The highlight of Freddy vs. Jason is that Jason gets a lot of cool kills, and Robert Englund is Freddy. But it just doesn't work.
It is Greg Kosinski.
and nobody is going to get this joke, and that's what's great
that's
about
funny.
It.
Between us. Still funny.
Greg, you're actually a pretty good guy in this one.
But to me, this is the ending. Like, this is the, you know...
Oh, you watch your
walking off into the sunset.
Jason X was awesome. I will stand by that
Jason,
film.
And I'll agree with you. When I saw Jason X in the theater, I fucking loved it. And it's got good replay value.
I think it was the first one I actually ever bought to own myself.
The funny thing is, not to get real off topic, but we're a part of that...
I love that shot, by the way.
We're a part of that Friday the 13th, the game group. On
Facebook.
And someone made a comment about Part 9, and they were trying to say it was the worst film, and there was a big debate between Jason X and Part 9, which was the worst, and
neither one of those are the worst to me.
Freddy vs. Jason is by far the worst.
I agree. And that's what I was trying to get at, is like, I feel like this movie has the same vibe that Halloween 3 has, where it's kind of like the black sheep of the series.
Okay, I'm going to break this down for you. Everybody likes to state that, like, Friday the 13th had this status quo, but when you really break every movie down, by the way, that ironing
makes
board
no
is
sense.
Upside down. But every
the ironing board is upside down. Who hangs it that way in this haunted house?
Every movie, though, subverts the one before it. I mean, I guess you could maybe argue that, like,
there's tropes
like,
that hit. Yeah,
two,
that
three,
hit.
And four are all kind of similar. But really from, like, the first one is a murder mystery. The second one is a slasher movie. The third one, you know, you've got
the
hockey mask.
What's the gimmick, too?
And the 3D. The fourth one is just solid. And here's our connection to the Evil Dead and Army of Darkness.
It's canon that Jason is a Deadite. Did you know that?
Yeah, according to Jeff Katz, who is the reason we didn't get Kane Hodder in Freddy vs. Jason.
He's bad with Victor Miller right now.
His, fuck you, Victor Miller.
But
Jeff Katz wrote Freddy vs. Jason vs. Ash, the comic adaptation, and it's fucking awesome. If they made that into a movie...
By the way, that was going to be my definitive end. I want that to be my end. I want Ash to put down Jason and Freddy.
I wouldn't have a problem with
an end
that.
Like that.
Would you make Ash serious, or would you still keep it slapstick like Army
of
Darkness?
It's Ash. It's part two. I have to go part two. It's that balance of horror and comedy.
I'm going to have to disagree slightly. I would have him have his moments, but if anything, Freddy is going to be somewhat of that role. You don't
but
want
you can do the balance between the two of them. You can have finally somebody talk back to Freddy and stay on his level of wit
and
stupidity.
I agree with that, but I just don't think you need to go too slapstick with
that's
Ash.
Why I said part two, not part three, where he's getting like his tongue ripped out in the fucking graveyard and shit and punched with the Tweety Bird sound.
But by the way, R.I.P. Ash vs. the Evil Dead. Great fucking show. Sad to see Bruce Campbell ride off into the sunset. But he's, you know, the show was supposed to, I think, they planned it for 5 years, and it was going to tie everything together and have a definitive ending.
It deserved an ending. Fans deserve an ending.
I haven't seen the third season.
Netflix, pick that shit up.
I have season 1 and 2, but I haven't seen the third season, so I don't know if it has a definitive ending or not. Don't fucking spoil it for me, you pieces of shit!
I still have not seen all of season 2 yet.
Fucking season 2 is even better than the first one. I really
season
enjoyed it.
Season 2 is way better than
I love his dad in season 2. Yeah. It's fucking
oh my
worse.
God, that's good stuff. Alright, back to my point before. Part 5, it's an imposter. Now, a lot of people dislike that movie. I'll defend it. Part 6, he comes back, and he's a it's sort of
behind the mask.
It's a self-aware, almost a spoof of the movies, more lighthearted. And then like part seven, you know, introduced the girl with psychic powers. He goes to New York in part eight. This movie, obviously, creepy as fuck. The star of this movie is the effect. There's that bladder effect again.
I can see it. Like the appliance on there.
Jason X, he goes to space. We've covered that. I mean, a lot of people dislike that, but, you know, I mean, where do you go from there?
Come on.
Now, is he back to Josh now?
He's a husk. These effects.
His body can't take the Jason was holding him together because of all the pain that he went through. I mean, he got shot in the head. He's been stabbed through the thing. Now he's seeing himself.
I believe him. I fucking believe him that he's dying right here.
Yeah.
There's a
melting.
This is really good. Like, I've never really paid attention to how well.
Is this in the normal R-rated version?
Like, it's really cut down. There's going to be specifically a shot coming up where he falls to the ground and his jaw rips off. I'm pretty sure
that is so cool.
That's methacellulose. This shot right there.
Is it screwed in?
Yeah, it's screwed to the ground. And this right here.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, this is definitely. It's been a while since I've seen the
unrated. Holy shit.
The heat coming off of it and just the way it's lit. Like the backlight, natural backlight.
That is amazing. It looks like his clothes was melting as well. That's amazing.
It makes me wonder because if that was actually Josh or if. Because he just woke up and that was Jason. Like,
he's still breathing there. I think he's still dying.
Oh, I thought you were talking. Is that the guy who played Josh?
No.
To a point, it is. And then where he's like writhing right there at that last shot, that was a part of the effects crew in that scene. Okay. This scene right here where she takes the shower, there is so much controversy about this. Okay. Evidently, according to Adam Marcus, she had agreed to do nudity. And then she got on set and decided she wasn't going to do it. Now, I'm going to argue that this is a scene where she's, like, mourning the death of her mother, so nudity probably was not necessary. But she's wearing nude-colored, underwear, and she's wearing Dixie cups over her tits, so they could not film down to show her. She nearly quit when this was being filmed because of problems with her and Adam Marcus, and there are some people who believe, and Adam, I'd like to get your input on this, but there's some people who believe that Adam stopped and Sean Cunningham directed the last remaining shots of the movie just to get it done. And I would imagine that, like, if this is true, Adam was probably under, like, a ton of pressure, you know, having never made a movie before, you know, on a theatrical scale, because he'd done some short films. He actually had a short film that won, like, a lot of awards. It's one of the reasons he got hired for this.
I can understand the reasoning why you wouldn't want to show her tits. Like you said, her mom was just murdered. She's crying. So why would you want to see, you know what I mean? Like,
I kind of do.
I do too, but like if you're looking at
Jim
it from the
Carrey
perspective.
Jim Carrey did a new scene, and he met up with a guy before that. Okay?
I love you, Philip Morris.
Einhorn and Fingal.
And he collapsed, and it was dramatic. You got to see his ass. Just saying.
You're the agent, sir. I was like, I love you, Philip Morris.
I will defend him. I'll defend the nudity.
Does she have blood on her?
It looks like there's blood already on her, yeah. I don't know why.
I never noticed
that. Is a good point. I've never noticed that.
Unless there was blood on the handle when she opened the door. That's what it had to have been. Yeah, because he's back there, so that makes sense.
I love this right here. The flashers. It just makes for a nice ambiance.
Who the fuck is back there?
And I think this is sort of a played out with just enough suspension of disbelief on her part to where she, you know, he's being kind of rough with her, but at the same time, like, he comes in fast enough to where, you know, I believe Stephen may have murdered my mother, but at the same time, like, I mean, we have a child together, and this is my current boyfriend who's a total tool, only fucking her to get a story.
I saw it.
Shut up.
Okay, now, if you notice right here, you can see Stephen Culp, is that his name?
Yes.
You can see his reflection, not Jason's reflection, in the car hood. That was an oversight, I'm sure. And this is one of those things, like, probably on VHS you couldn't tell, but on digital format you can totally tell.
Back over that motherfucker.
Oh, God.
Why does he have a Connecticut plates?
Oh, well, that's, because they're, that's their car, because they came in. Because
yeah, they came to town.
That's right.
Pay attention to the movie. God damn it. You drunk?
No. Yes, I'm drunk off two fucking Bud Lights. Have you seen my drinking schedule? Yeah.
I don't know.
Calm the fuck down!
I just always assume that you kind of, you know,
stay drunk. I wish.
Cheers to that.
Yeah, look at it from her perspective. She's like, he's like, it's your ex-boyfriend, your baby daddy. He's like, I just killed your fucking boyfriend now.
Yeah.
You may
have killed earlier that day for killing your mom.
You may have killed my mom. Do I blow him? I don't know.
You just say, hi! For my crazy boyfriend.
I was going to say, I'm a woman. I'm fucked up in the head. And I kind of find this hot that you're telling me all these things. You killed who now?
I mean, she's probably has some form of PTSD. Who knows what wild shit turns you on past that point.
Well, the thing is, she literally just saw her ex-boyfriend, or her boyfriend. He had the blood. He was trying to hurt her. He saves her. And then she's like, no, I don't want to go.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is like, there was, who knows? Maybe they had some rough fucking, I mean, who knows? I mean, like, she's off put by it, but it's also like, it happened so quick that when he comes in,
once again,
there's probably enough suspension of disbelief on her part, like,
what's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
See, the blood's on her shirt still.
There's Adam Marcus, there's yep. His director's cameo.
He was so little.
Yeah, he's a kid. He came to the movie and had a beard, and then a few days in, he shaved, and somebody on the set was like, my God, like, is there nothing but fucking kids on this set? Okay.
Here it comes. I love this.
This scene is great, and this is actually the reason that Adam Marcus got the job. They did a shoot, like a director's test. And this is the scene they shot.
Here we go.
Already. So this is not, I don't believe this is the footage from that director set. But this is the, like, from the script, this is the scene that they shot. So.
Well, I just want to once again point out that this guy goes through so much shit in this movie.
Didn't they, like, go to school together and how, like, they know each other or something?
Who, John?
Him and Randy, correct his name?
Are you talking about the
movie? Used to, like, not in real life, like, in the movie.
No, yeah, they're just, like, they're just friends from the area. Supposed to be best friends.
I just realized, though, he's still wearing his Letterman's jacket.
Yeah.
I've never, like, well, I've seen it, just, like, putting it in my head, like, how old is he supposed to be?
Well,
is he just reliving his glory years? I guess. I
never. The doll later.
Oh.
I love that. I have a cut.
This scene right here, totally stolen from a John Woo movie. I don't know what movie it is, but that's taken directly from a John Woo movie.
It's still cool.
Yeah, I love
this. Cuffy. Welcome, Dano.
Bailey Greenbush.
Those eyebrows.
I was about to say, there's some big eyebrows.
Those are fierce.
Those are some Sam Elliott size eyebrows.
Is that another Roadhouse reference?
Yes. Look at this right here. Adam did his own stunt.
Whoop!
I love that shot right there. The semi-slow-mo. That's actually a really cool shot. This is using a diopter to be in front frame. To your foreground and your background are simultaneously in frame.
Mm. Oh, man, I didn't see the tire marks on his...
I wanna wait till you know me better. That fucking palm jab.
Okay. Suspend your disbelief right here. When he jumps over these fucking handcuffs, yeah, that is physically impossible.
Why would he hit him?
Somebody just did it.
Why would he hit him? That could have been like another person to help him.
He just
Why would you do that?
This shot right here, when it goes between his eyes, is a fucking great shot.
It reminds me of a shot, is it the one after Dawn of the Dead? You know what I'm talking about? The movie after Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, Day of the Dead. Yes. I know
what you're talking about. There's a shot in that exactly like that.
These couple of guys right here, they were like local DJs And
I was going to ask, why do all cops in like the 80s and 90s, especially early 90s, bend their knees?
To dance, low. They're bracing for the
low center of gravity, so it makes them hard to knock over.
That's what cool. The hell?
The thing I don't understand is
double knock and knocker. By God, double knock and knocker.
He does that though, but when he hits,
oh wait, clothesline, boom.
Mr. Greenbush, when he hits him with a palm strike, it just breaks his nose. It doesn't fucking kill him.
Yeah, it's knocked him out. I guess it didn't say he's dead, did it?
Well, no, because he
leaves. Exactly.
And of course, they run.
You're not going to touch that fucking ray of sunshine. That's like my favorite
line. Isn't that an improv line, too?
Oh, it's coming up.
I think this is an improv line.
It may be. I love that, like, Leslie Jordan's character is eating chips in, like, chips every fucking shot. You know what bothered me when I first saw this movie?
Foam's dead. Sorry.
These Jason masks hanging up. The fucking chevron
was weird.
It's, like, above the holes. Like, come on, put it down. It's not where it goes.
They're cheap little, like, dollar store masks, dude.
Repaint the fucking chevron! Goddamn! Oh my god, somebody gave Greg Osicki a gun.
Oh, dude, this whole, like, little bit coming up, man, it just fucking balls to the wall, and I love it.
You know what? Like,
that is Osicki! So cool. Probably shoot his own dick off.
A lot of these movies have like one or two set pieces, and I mean they make the most of them. This movie has a lot of different sets in it. I mean, there's the police station, there's the Voorhees house, there's here.
The chips.
That's a cool shot.
Give me the baby, Joey.
That fucking
train. <spin.
laughs>
Hey, I got a gun.
That's so
good.
That's exactly what would happen if somebody actually tried to arm wrestle Greg Osicki. It went in the bone. Right in the bone.
She's like, oh, fucking move. It's like me trying to get into a fucking house in the game and someone's like, stand by the window. Fucking move, Brad. Fucking move.
That's a cool shot. That's,
knocked the fuck out.
Stephen Culp's eyes. Just fucking...
Oh my god, they did the classic.
Yeah.
The double barrel.
get him, too.
But look at his eyes, though. Like, he's genuinely scary. Just, I mean, the way he's lit, and they're so bright, and...
That subtle makeup they put under it, too.
For this to be, like, someone's first feature film...
This movie has a lot more style than some of the movies. I know, like, Part 8 is sort of divisive, too, but it's beautifully shot as well. But it's just a different style than
the
other movies.
To me, you can kind of feel like... It's weird to say this. I don't know if it makes any sense, but you can tell it's a New Line movie. Like, I can kind of tell that.
A lot of the blue lighting.
Well, just the way
I love this right here. Oh, shit!
He's like, I've got him!
Oh, shit!
The edited version's hilarious when you watch it on TV.
This substance he's being dumped into?
Let's see if it's his elbow. I think it's his elbow. Is this supposed to be... Boom, it's elbow.
Yeah, elbow. Okay, that substance that he...
Told what it is, the gel breaks off. Goes up.
Okay, he was being dunked in what's supposed to be hot grease. Mm-hmm. Do you know what that actually was? It was root beer.
That's even worse.
And Leslie Jordan,
drinking that little...
He evidently still has, like, ill feelings towards Adam Marcus because, like, he just didn't like being in the root beer.
Been hot grease.
That's a good point.
Make a fucking decision. He'd be like,
dude, were you sleeping on my couch? Fucking, you're going to get your face in the root beer.
I thought Osicki was sleeping.
No, it was Greg Osicki. Leslie Jordan. Now, Leslie Jordan he makes a pretty good living doing the things he does.
I like this.
His eyes right there, man. He's so fucking eerie.
Yeah, that's definitely not in the unrated or the rated version.
Brutal right there.
Oh, I don't remember this at all.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dude.
Notice the reds in his eyes. That's it's like an eyedropper kind of thing. You put it in there, and it's temporary. You got to continually do it like every shot. But
you flare flop. Oh, she looks. Look at her eyes. They were rolled back in her head.
Yeah, it's sexy. So we're gonna climax going to the.
We are gonna climax.
Oh, this is her Linda Hamilton moment. She's hair's back. Yeah, she's the badass is coming out.
By the way, they're apparently making a new Terminator with Linda.
You with Linda Hamilton?
I saw a set photo and she looks good.
I do.
I know you would.
So while we're getting to this point where we know it's about to come, we can go ahead and knock out. Another question. Let me find it really quick. Here we go. Margaret would like to know, why is this movie less popular than the others?
Because this movie dared to be different. It's the ninth movie in the series. Like, I mean,
earlier you were saying this is probably the part three in your opinion. I compare this actually to part six of Halloween.
Yeah,
because it adds a fuck ton of random lore that's not ever addressed until that movie.
Yeah.
That's what it reminds me of.
Well,
but the
difference with this movie and part six kind of had to clean up the mess that part five made.
That's true. Part five was a turd.
I'm not going to disagree with you. This one, they definitely tried doing a bunch of new stuff. And
you come alone? You got that weed?
I trade you this baby.
Let's be real, guys. He's black as crap.
You're about to be... About to kill Voorhees. Now, the dagger in this movie, is that does that have any relevance to any other film? Like how we saw the Necronomicon?
No.
It stylistically is very similar to the Kandarian dagger, but it's not the same thing. But the shot coming up where she catches the dagger is the most expensive shot in the entire film.
Well, it's fucking amazing.
It is a cool shot.
I do like... Go ahead. Sorry.
No, ask a question. Well,
we have one more... Well, we have two more questions. One's more of a statement. My daughter loves Jason. Oh, thank you, Laura. That's not really a question.
Didn't Sam Wynn have a question?
That's the last one that Sam wrote for us. It says, if you could reboot the entire film series again, how would you go about it, and who would you cast for it? Would you ignore all the past... films, or would you keep them in mind, or rewrite the entire thing, refresh
it? I know Brandon doesn't like it, but I really thoroughly enjoyed the reboot just because of what it was. You know what it's supposed to be, right? They were trying to get Jason Voorhees for a Supernatural crossover.
Yeah, that's true.
They wanted Jason
there it is
to
in
take,
expensive
take on the Winchester brothers. And it just it went on for so long. It was supposed to happen like season four, and it just went on for so long.
I never knew that.
Yeah. And then that's the reason why Jared Padalecki ended up being in the movie.
Yeah.
Was because of that. And the same thing with Dean ended up being in the My Bloody Valentine reboot.
Yes.
Which is actually pretty fucking good. That's a great reboot.
But also in House of Wax, which is not a good reboot.
No, that movie sucks.
I really love the way they did the reboot, just because they played so much on the older films. They paid a lot of attention to that, and I loved that.
Would you, like you were saying, they were going to build for a Supernatural... Would you dig a Supernatural movie with Sam and Dean chasing Jason Voorhees?
I would not.
He's not a Supernatural fan, though.
But, I mean, their fandom, they
is
have...
Is Cass in it, too?
Oh, yeah.
Then, yes. Those three, well, the guy and going after Jason,
listen,
come on.
Listen, am I fine with that being, like, in an episode of Supernatural? Fine. As a movie, no. There's so many better ways they could take this.
I would still rather see, to this day, Ash take on Jason Voorhees. It's now canon. Why not finally have that happen?
I agree. I think that would be really cool.
Ash Williams versus just Jason. If you can't do Freddy, just do Jason.
What's your version? Now I'll close with.
I really enjoy, like Scott was saying. I actually enjoy the remake of Friday the 13th because I feel like it takes the first three films and it kind of combines it into one. You get he goes from the burlap sack to the mask and that dude smoking weed. Which, like, that's probably like my least favorite part. And then the sex scene is
I'm
so
about to
over.
Turn on the whoop-ass machine. I like that guy. He's funny.
But, I mean, I enjoy that. I mean, if you're going to do it, you're going to refresh it. Whoop. I mean, I think you should have some lore similar to this. The fact that Jason's a Deadeye, I'm okay with. I understand that.
He's a League of Demon by himself.
But I understand why they went this route with this movie, because you got to think, you said, they kind of played out the entire idea of, oh, we're at a summer camp, we got kids, this and that. Which I understand, that's why they went with part eight, Jason Takes Manhattan as well. I understand that. But I think from...
Oh, by the way, there's Jason speaking his first words in the...
Yeah, that didn't make a whole lot of sense.
I Adam, I love you, man, but that's the one thing about this movie that, that bothers me more than anything. Like,
which I understand, because they're trying to build the suspense of who is Jason, who isn't.
And he killed the wrong person, you dumb bitch.
Your mama's hitting that.
No, it's your stepdaddy. Big Papa.
Well, not her stepdaddy. It was going to be her stepdaddy.
Oh, this scene is fucking amazing coming up.
All right, real quick, I'll say mine. I wouldn't ignore anything that's happened, but my movie would be called Friday Part 13, because the next movie they make will be the 13th movie, and it would sort of be the conclusion, the final battle between Tommy Jarvis and Jason.
Corey Feldman has said.
I know, but I wouldn't hire Corey Feldman.
No, fuck you. Tom Matthews gets that fucking nod.
I would give it to Tom Matthews, because look at Tom Matthews.
I love that.
Looks Corey grizzled.
Corey Feldman would not be a contender to fight
against
him.
I have met him. He's a really nice guy.
I like Corey too.
But he's not. He was a good child actor. No offense, Corey, but you lack a little bit in the department. If you've seen Never Hike Alone, one of the highlights of that is seeing Tom Matthews reprise his role.
I marched the fuck out.
That was so great. Now, not to interrupt myself, but this scene where the Jason demon goes up
Diana's
cooch, this is the only... By the way, that's the crate from Creepshow.
So this
movie is in continuity with Creepshow.
For Die Hard and Creepshow?
Yes.
And it's also in continuity with Evil Dead?
Evil Dead.
The Evil Dead one makes the most sense with him being a Deadite, but what were you going to say, Brandon?
But this is the only scene that in anything that she's ever done, Erin Gray, that she's ashamed of. Because she didn't know that they were going to do that.
It was done after she was done filming.
Yeah, and she's sort of forgiving it, but like she went to the premiere and was like, what the fuck? You had a demon crawl up my vajay? Come on.
This is amazing.
Okay,
the leap out shot.
And Adam, here's the other thing I'm going to take you to task for. Why is he reborn with his clothes on and a hockey mask? Like, I realize having a naked Jason probably would not have flown with the sensors.
Hey, that would have really done Jason penis.
Well, not only that, though, you really have to suspend your belief on this, because the fact of the Necronomicon and stuff, maybe it brought him back in the form that he was in last. I mean, you know what I mean?
Holy shit, I'm going to go with that. I like that. I
can explain it away. I just, you know...
Give me the fucking
but
gravy.
The reason they had those props is because they were shooting Army of Darkness around the same time, and they had some mutual friends. They went on set, and they're like, here, use these props, just as like a cool little Easter egg in the movie.
Well, it's kind of like, this also ties in, of course, at the very end with Nightmare on Elm Street, but Nightmare on Elm Street also tied in with Evil Dead 2, with Freddy's claw being in the shed.
Claw. Above the little doorway, yeah.
His glove, you know what I mean. This is like
boom.
This is probably like the best.
Love that
scene. This beats the fucking part 8 boxing scene by a mile. Dude.
Kane choreographed this this entire fight. There's one shot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he did.
That's
there's a shot later on, like
once again, this guy gets the shit kicked out of him throughout the course of this movie, guys.
There's a shot coming up where I think their timing's like a half a second off, but it was probably, they probably couldn't edit it if they had to put like a weird insert shot. But otherwise, I think this fight is awesome. It kicks him in the balls and nope.
By his hair.
He just shoves him down. Because he's pissed off at him.
Ooh.
I love it.
Come on, man.
I think it's this shot right here where he's like, see, he's kind of waiting on him. You know what I mean? Like, that could have been tightened up a little bit. But man.
Nope.
You fucked up.
This is actually the longest, with the exception of like the shit in Freddy vs. Jason. I mean, this is the longest, altercation between Jason and a normal person. Okay. This jungle gym.
The birds.
Is from the birds.
Yes.
The only thing that's different about it is they added a bird on top of it as a little nod.
That's really cool.
But that was from the Universal backlot as well. I mean, Adam's a huge horror guy, and he wanted to
Easter eggs.
Yeah, it's really I appreciate that kind of stuff because, especially when you you find out things you didn't know, and then you can go back and watch it, and like, oh my god, that's so cool. All right, this shot right here, when they were shooting, this was Adam Marcus's 24th birthday when they filmed him, Jason getting stabbed. So he turned 24 on set. Just a baby. A wee baby.
This is just amazing.
He's coming.
How do they do these? Is this all just like added in? Kind of like on the chest, I can see, you can actually see the light.
Earlier on, when the coroner is having something similar happen to him, they put light bulbs under his shirt, and they would light them up, and then, like, I guess they rotoscoped some of this.
I noticed the slow fade from lights leaving. That is amazing. It's only on certain ones, but you can always see like the light fade off the clothes.
Yeah, the clothes.
Do you?
It sounds like Dusty Rose there.
Shut up.
Do you believe that this should have been the final one?
In some ways, I do, because like this is a conclusive ending.
Yeah.
I mean, I want them to continue to make Friday the 13th movies.
Was this
well,
the same
past.
Way, I'm the same thing with Halloween. Like,
this the one supposed to have the ending, or was it actual Freddy vs. Jason? With Pinhead.
That was Freddy versus Jason.
Oh my god, that is one of the coolest ideas ever.
Which would have put them in continuity with Hellraiser, that would have been awesome.
Have you heard that?
Yes, I have.
I love that so much, that should fucking have happened.
Yeah. Like, why did she even have to think about this? Like, why would she even
Oh, by the way, the hand that's grabbing his crotch, that's Adam's hand. They're under the stage, and like, they can't see where they're grabbing, so, and like, evidently, like, he bonked him a couple times in his nards.
Little boy going to hurl. And some of this was done with puppets, correct?
Yeah, those are all actor-operated, like, hand puppets.
Well, wasn't there also little puppets for, like, Steven and them? Because I've seen...
He owned his own little puppet, because at first they shot it with
This shot makes me think of, like, Porky Pig on... That's all, folks. That's like, every time, I always think of that.
Oh, watch this. It's going to break off into the hockey mask. See it?
Yeah, oh my god.
Never noticed that.
That's a nice little touch.
Seems like,
I'm not sure that was even in the script. I think that was just the supervisor.
That's awesome.
That did that. Speaking of which, this is a good opportunity to talk about
Kiss the Girl.
K&B, and specifically some of the other movies that the
they've worked on.
No, K&B, but specifically, and I'm gonna butcher this guy's name, Al Magliocchetti. He was the main guy. Like, K&B got hired, and he was friends of them, and they brought him on to assist them. But he did visual effects in Spookies, King Kong Lives, Friday the 13th, the TV series, Brain Damage, Prom Night 3, Basket Case 2, Frankenhooker that we've done on this podcast before, Terminator 2, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, Star Trek 6, Hook, RoboCop 3, Natural Born Killers, Puppet Master 5, and the motherfucking X-Men! He's had a long career. Here's Sean Cunningham's dog again. They put a hot dog under the mask.
He's gonna piss on the mask, and it's gonna bring Jason back.
That's part four of Nightmare.
Sorry, that only works for Freddy. Sorry,
a dog wouldn't piss. In a Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah, of course not.
When I saw this as a kid, I flipped out, man.
I will
Kane
stand.
Hodder.
It's Kane Hodder.
It's Kane Hodder using the dam.
Making him.
That's awesome.
Having played Jason.
Is that still part of the mask?
That's still part of the mask. You try to drag it under.
He played Leatherface in part three stunt coordination parts. So, other than he hasn't played Michael Myers, he's played three of the big four, which is pretty damn cool. We love you, Kane. We wish.
We do.
We hope if they make another one of these movies, they'll dust your bones off and let you have one final one.
We thoroughly enjoy you as Victor Crowley, by the way.
Oh, please keep making Victor Crowley movies. Adam Green, big fan of him. A lot of good Adam directors. We've covered pretty much everything I had written down, with exception of one thing. I very nearly, at one point, got the head of Jason Voorhees from this movie. I was bidding on it on eBay, and it was like up to $300, and it had like, you know, a few hours left. And then all of a sudden, it shot up immensely. Now, I can't, with 100% certainty, say the person who owns it now is the person who outbid me, but there is a very good chance that the person who owns it is the one who did. Do either one of you happen to know who owns Jason's head from this movie now?
I was going to ask about that. I thought Kane did.
No, Kirk Hammett from Metallica owns...
So he was the one that's bidding on it?
I can't 100% confirm he's the one who
is
bidding.
He's a big horror collector.
Yes, he is.
What was that on? What? There was a show on... I want to say it was on Discovery, but the guy would find retro toys for people, and he was finding stuff...
Toy Hunter.
That's it.
Yeah, I've seen that.
It's really good.
Yeah, I have his book, which I highly recommend. It's called All That Horror Business. It's like basically his collection. He's got a new book out that's specifically about his horror posters. But like, I mean, his guitars, he's got, you know, custom made, you know, Lon Chaney and...
I was watching a documentary the other day on Netflix that he's in, showing off more of his horror collection, and it had something to do with...
Didn't he have some stuff of Bela Lugosi as well?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's got Bela Lugosi's cape.
He owns it.
I don't remember specifically if it's the one actually from Dracula.
I thought he was buried in that.
He was buried the one from Dracula.
Well, there's some conjecture of whether or not he was buried in the one that was actually from the first Dracula, or if it was one like Dracula Meets the Wolfman, or you know what I mean, like one of those, or Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman.
You
want to stop it?
No.
Okay.
Put it back on the main screen. It doesn't apply any background.
Okay, that's what I thought I was worried about.
Yeah. No, don't worry about that shit. Cool your jets. Cool your jets. Cool brains.
Do you want to kind of talk? You know, we finished with the movie real quick. How we got in contact with Adam Marcus?
I talked about that all in the prologue.
Okay,
you'd know that if you listened to the podcast I haven't released yet. Dumb fuck. <Yeah.
laughs> Fuck me.
All right, we'll put this as the finality of this movie. The body count, 24. That's pretty fucking high.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot. It was filmed between July 20th and September 4th of 1992. And I will always have a soft spot for this movie. You know, it freaked me out the first time I saw it, or the first, you know, 10 minutes I saw of it. But then, you know, when I watched it again, I'll be honest with you, man, I didn't like it. But over the years, I've come to really appreciate it for what it is and the things that it brought different to the table. So, Adam, I know you get a lot of shit from people, but you got a friend in me, brother. Thank you very much for...
thank you for the endorsement. That's an incredible thing. Like, it's been nice seeing you grow this podcast from where it was in just less than a year.
Yeah. Well,
about a year now. It's about
next
a year now.
Next month will be our 1 year anniversary.
I know you're doing this. I have a really quick question, maybe that you might know. With the cover of this movie, and even on, we're watching the just the home screen, pretty much the home
menu.
Why is Jason's mask silver?
Why is it metal?
I think that was just an art choice. It looked cool with the fire, it like reflected and stuff.
That was my only question.
You're welcome. Sorry. All right, well, we're gonna wrap things up. Thank you, as always, for supporting the podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Rants Black Lodge.
Speaking of Twitter, really quick, I just want to give a shout out to a couple people who actually followed us on Twitter. Super random, but Marty the Moth from Lucha Underground actually follows the page.
Yeah,
super random.
That is super random.
And also, there's another follower just recently as a Dismal Abysmal. So if you actually check the stuff out, and they're big Danzig fans. And
Molo! Download the podcast or I'll kick your ass!
But yeah, I just want to give a cut. Like,
doesn't John Cena's father follow us?
Christopher Spencer follows us. I don't think John Cena's father follows us.
I thought you told me John Cena's father follows us.
Christopher Spencer follows us, and I'm not sure exactly what he does, but he has over 20,000 followers.
Oh, well, we love you, Christopher Spencer. Get people to give us some money. like I said, you can follow us at Rants Black Lodge on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook, Rants for Black Lodge Podcast.
It was John Cena's father's wrestling organization.
Oh, okay.
That's what it was. Right. Sorry to interrupt you.
All right, cool. Thanks, John Cena's dad. Wish we could see you too. download the podcast at Podbean, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, Player FM, Google Play Music. Am I leaving any out?
The website, did you?
Oh, iTunes. And of course, as always, visit our homepage at juicykruger.com. For Stank Dick Eddie and Padawan Fat Fuck Scott Jr.
Go fuck yourself.
And Brandon A. Lane closing out another edition of the Rants from the Black Lodge podcast. And if you want some of that good old-fashioned rant swag, check out, most importantly, joshshirtshop.threadless.com.
I swear we're going to get some Day for Night. It's going to be a new Day for Night shop. And tits. I've been working on getting this made.
This one that says tits. Okay.
It's going to be hands up. It's going to say tits.
All right. Well, buy some shirts and we'll think about making some new ones. All right. Thanks, everybody. See you next month for our 1-year anniversary.